Open the podcast bay door as hell.
Welcome to episode 9 of Welcome to Geek Town. I'm your host, Kurt Otstead. I've been a proud geek all my life, being into role-playing games, board games, sci-fi, fantasy, and especially superheroes and comics. And I want to help others join me in those pursuits. But I've found that sometimes people can get overwhelmed or feel left out because they don't already have what some consider the requisite knowledge to be considered a fan. And that's where Welcome to Geek Town comes in. Here you can ask your questions without feeling like a gatekeeper is calling you out for not being yet fully versed in every aspect of your new interest. This week's question is from Joshua C., who wants to know about the newest Marvel show to hit the airwaves. He says, "I just watched the pilot for Cloak and Dagger, and it piqued my interest. While my Marvel geek game is generally pretty strong, I never got into them, so what can you tell me about those characters, and what did you think of the pilot in terms of how it matches the comic?" Thanks for writing in, Joshua. I also quite enjoyed the pilot, and the subsequent episodes that I've seen. At the point that I'm recording this, I've watched the first 6 episodes of the series, and I'm going to be using those for comparisons to the comics. If you're intending to watch the show, and again, I recommend you do, you probably should do that before listening to this, although I don't think I'll be giving away anything so big that it would diminish your enjoyment. Let me start with an overview of my opinion on this. A lot of the details behind the characters of Cloak and Dagger are changed, from how they got their powers, to their familial relationships, or lack thereof, to the relationship between Cloak and Dagger themselves. However, given all that, the TV show airing on the Freeform Network does feel right. While they're not quite the Cloak and Dagger we know from the comics, you can see why they've made many of the changes they did, and they work within the context of the show to create a modern take on these classic characters. And they are definitely old enough to be considered classic. Cloak and Dagger have been around for over 35 years now, having first appeared in Spectacular Spider-Man number 64, written by Bill Mantlo and drawn by Ed Hannigan. Unlike in the show, when we first meet these two, they already have their powers, and we get told via Dagger monologuing as to how they got those abilities. In this story, the pair are portrayed as sympathetic anti-heroes. They kill, which is why Spider-Man is fighting against them the entire issue, but their reasons for killing and who they kill are fairly understandable. Tandy Bowen and Tyrone Johnson are two runaways who left their homes in Shaker Heights, Ohio, and Boston, Massachusetts, respectively, and came to New York around the same time. Tyrone helps recover Tandy's purse after it's stolen, and the two become fast friends. When offered shelter by strangers, Tandy accepts, and Tyrone stays with her to make sure she isn't hurt. Unfortunately, as you can probably predict, the strangers were not actually helpful, but instead kidnap the teens and take them to a lab where they, along with other teen runaways, are injected with a synthetic heroin being developed by the mob, or the Magia as they are called in the Marvel Comics, who wants to cut the costs of importing real heroin from outside the US. All of the teens injected with this new drug end up dying, except Tyrone and Tandy, who instead find themselves with their unique and polar opposite powers. They team up to find and kill the men who were involved in the creation and testing of the drug in order to get vengeance for all the teens that died. If you've watched the show at all, you're starting to see what I mean when I talk about all the differences. In the live-action version, Tandy and Tyrone are both still in contact with their parents, at least those that are still living. Tandy may not live with her mom, but she does still live in the same city and has a tenuous relationship. And Tyrone still lives with his mom and dad. Their relationship is somewhat strained, especially since Tyrone discovered his powers, but they're still a source of love and support for him. And secondly, the show is placed not in New York City, but in New Orleans. A number of the show's changes can be chalked up to this shift in locale. There are supporting characters deep into voodoo. There are discussions of the post-Katrina city, and the teen's origin story is no longer about an illicit drug, but a different kind of tragedy tied very close to the time and place. Let's dive deeper into that origin and how it's changed. Cloak & Dagger's first appearance was in 1982, and their first miniseries was published in 1983-84. For our younger listeners, this was the era where the war on drugs was in full effect, with the Just Say No campaign organized by First Lady Nancy Reagan, and nearly every TV show on the air having a very special episode dealing with drugs or alcohol abuse. So, in addition to having an origin story relating to drugs, the duo spent most of their early appearances in the comics fighting against drug dealers, traffickers, and creators. Today, while the drug war continues, these older stories come off a little preachy and simplistic. So the drugs seen in the Cloak & Dagger TV show are real and don't play at all into the superhero's origins. Instead, we have an environmentally themed origin story with an unsafe oil rig exploding off the coast and a strange energy wave coming from the rig hitting the water while both Tyrone and Tandy are sinking in it, for very different reasons from one another. The two get their power as younger kids, although they don't truly manifest again until the pair meet back up as teens. Speaking of their powers, these have stayed pretty consistent with the comics, with some changes made for artistic license. It appears that for most, if not all of the first season, we're not going to see Cloak and Dagger fighting as superpowered vigilantes, or even go by the name Cloak & Dagger, despite the TV show being named that. So we haven't seen Tandy throw her light daggers, nor has Tyrone sucked anyone into the Dark Force dimension through his cloak to sap the light out of them, which frightens, weakens, and can even kill his foes. But we have seen Tandy make and use her eponymous dagger on multiple occasions, and Tyrone has teleported from one shadowy place to another, even if the location he ends up in is not entirely under his control yet. Of course, I'm only halfway through the first season, so their abilities will most likely grow in strength, as well as become more under their control. The big addition to the pair's powers for the television show is a type of empathy that each has. Cloak can touch a person to see their deepest fears, while Dagger's touch shows her the person's greatest hopes. This is shown to be very useful for investigating their separate personal quests that the TV series has given them. And when the pair touch, their powers seem to clash in an explosive way. This is very different from the comics, where Cloak has been dependent on Dagger's light to keep his unabiding hunger at bay for most of his superpowered existence. In addition, daggers have been shown in the comics to cure some people of their addictions. With Tandy's mom suffering from alcohol addiction in the show, This would be a very useful ability for her to acquire, sooner rather than later. Moving away from their powers, but to a related aspect, no superhero is complete without their costume. In the show, the two have not yet started wearing traditional superhero garb, but have stuck to street clothes. We have seen a very comic-accurate version of Cloak's costume, but Tyrone has not yet put it on. We'll have to see if that changes down the line. As you would imagine, in the comics, Cloak wears, well, a big cloak. Usually only his face is visible, with the majority of his body covered with the cloak and hidden in shadows. Dagger's comic book outfit is, let's say, troublesome. It's a plain white bodysuit, which is fitting given Tandy's ballet background in both the comics and the show. However, in order to reflect her name, a large dagger-shaped piece has been cut out, with the hilt crossing the top of her breasts and the tip of the blade going down past her belly button. On a channel that was previously called ABC Family, it's difficult to imagine putting a 20-year-old, playing someone even younger, in this outfit on a regular basis. I could be proven wrong, but I seriously doubt it in this case. One big similarity between the comic, at least the two miniseries done in the 80s, and the show, are some of the supporting characters. Specifically, Father Delgado and Detective Bridget O'Reilly, played on TV by Jaime Zevallos and Emma Lahana, respectively. Father Delgado was a source of support for the teens in the comics, and as the priest at Tyrone's church, looks to play a similar role in the show. Detective O'Reilly also seems destined for a similar path to her comic book counterpart. When she first appears in the comics, she's investigating Cloak and Dagger's vigilante activities against the drug trade, and tries to arrest them after an innocent runaway kid is killed in the crossfire of one of their battles. However, soon thereafter, she sees them in a more sympathetic light and assists them in small ways here and there. Of course, this being a comic book, the detective gets powers of her own in the second Cloak and Dagger miniseries, and becomes the vigilante known as Mayhem, mainly fighting drug dealers and corrupt cops. You can see hints towards that future in the character's development so far, and I look forward to seeing how that plays out. Finally, let's look at the relationship between Cloak and Dagger in the show, as opposed to the comics. As I mentioned, the pair became fast friends according to their original origin story, and they've basically been inseparable since then. Although, that's mostly because of Cloak's need for Dagger's energies to stay sane. Tandy, while she loves Cloak, sometimes portrayed as a romantic love, other times more platonic, often feels guilty for wanting a life outside of her pairing with him, knowing that he is literally dependent on her to stay alive without killing anyone. Fortunately, this type of codependency has not shown up at all in the show, as some critics have noted that having a black man representing darkness and being dependent on a white woman that represents light and purity is not the best portrayal of an interracial relationship. Now, I've mainly focused on the differences between the show and the comic. However, I believe both are valid interpretations of the characters. I wish we could hear the feelings of the duo's creator on this show. Unfortunately, Bill Mantlow suffered a brain injury from a hit-and-run accident in 1992 and has been in institutional care ever since. If you'd like to donate to his support fund, you can do so at billmantlow.com. I'll also have a link at my website. And thank you, Bill, for creating these characters and others that we've gotten so much enjoyment from. That's it for this week's episode. I'm always in need of more questions and would love to hear your feedback in general, so please send me an email at welcometogeektown@gmail.com. You can also leave a comment directly on the show notes at www.welcometogeektown.com. While you're there, be sure to check the Amazon links to some of the stories we've discussed. Other contact options include facebook.com/welcometogeektown or Twitter at Geektown Podcast. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe and give me a 5-star review over on iTunes to join the Geektown City Council so we can help other people find the show and tell them, welcome to Geektown, population us. Welcome to Geektown is written, narrated, edited, and produced by me, Kurt Onstead. Theme music is by Aaron Levitz, logo art by Archie Santana. All other sound clips are the copyright of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended, falling under fair use.